and be part of the festivities.
All right.
And maybe DiStefano will call in. Who knows? Somebody good. Ask Shonu to see if she can, you know, rouse him on the telex.
The telex?
I don't know. How do you get hold of mirrors who are in Rome? Who can say? When I was covering the conclave.
Yeah.
There were obviously no laptops. There was no anything. So we just dictated stuff. I mean, I would call up somebody here at the Hartford Current, and I would type my story on a little Olivetti, in my bedroom at the hotel, and then I would dictate it to them. I mean, you sort of think, oh, that wasn't really all that long ago, was it? I guess it probably was. Never mind.
All right.
Dave in his car.
Dave in a car.
Yes, hello. How
Dude.
Are you doing?
Hi.
Listen, I have a lot of cats, and I have that problem all the time. So
yeah.
What you want to do is just use a water hose and squirt the cat. It'll come right down.
Well, first of all, how many people have water hose that'll shoot 50 feet in the air?
You gotta get some good pressure, but...
Yeah, you have to go to Alabama.
You shouldn't have a
problem. To a hydrant?
You squirt him with the hose, I guarantee
feet.
He'll be down.
Bull Connors is one of those, maybe, but... That doesn't seem safe somehow.
American LaFrance or something?
Yeah, you nail this cat
my
with
God.
Water. I mean, there's a very good chance you're going to put the cat right off its cage. No wonder he has a lot of cats. He probably goes through them like a knife through butter. I don't
nail a cat with a throw of water.
Thing is really a good idea.
Nah.
I just think the cat will come down. I think they come down. I mean, there are not cat skeletons up in trees.
No, this is true.
They don't sit up there and starve to death.
We seem to
they
be getting
hungry. They come down.
We have a number of calls coming in.
Major
screenage going on,
yeah.
and maybe we'll take another one or two.
Susan Bicewicz last night gave out M&Ms. I don't know what that was all about. Was that sort of to reach out to the hip-hop community? They were red and white M&Ms.
Reach out to the hip-hop community? I don't know.
Yeah. But that's what, here's AJ with a cat collision.
All right. AJ, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm calling because I had a problem with a cat in a tree, and I called the Marble Animal Hospital.
Yeah.
And the number is 295-8381. And there's a girl there that hooked me up with a guy who climbs trees.
Yeah, really?
And unfortunately, though, he charges $90.
Yeah.
But he will get the cat out.
Man.
Because I had a cat that it was like almost 100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And he took it down, so he's interested.
Wow.
Okay.
And I ended up with the cat in the long run.
So this is like the Spider-Man of Central Connecticut.
Yeah, you had to see him. He just went right up, grabbed the cat, put it in a sack, and brought him down.
Well, I want to meet this guy. and where do you live? Where did this happen?
I live out in Marlboro.
Oh, so who knows how far? I mean, he's the Spider-Man of Marlboro.
Well, he's not from this area, so he might very well go out. I'm not really sure.
Okay, so we don't know how big his range is.
We'll try.
But if you call the Marlboro Animal Hospital, they know how to reach this guy.
Yes, they do. One of the girls there, I guess, knows him very well, and that's who gave me the number, and I called him. I don't have the number with me, otherwise I'd
Who knows what else he climbs on? Maybe a lot of people know him well. Anyway, let's talk to Howie very quickly.
Howie in West Hartford, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Howie.
I can get the cat out of the tree.
How's that?
All I got to do is find out where the tree is.
You got to find out where the tree is?
Yeah, and I got a ladder, and I'll get the cat out of the tree.
Oh, you'll just go and do this?
Yes.
Out of the goodness of your heart. It's in Windsor. Do you want to go all the way up to Windsor with your ladder?
Yeah.
You have that kind of free time? All right. Well, we'll stay on the line for a second. Maybe she'll come back, call back. And maybe you and Dee Dee will strike up a wonderful friendship. You never know.
Okay. Will you take his number?
Right. Yeah, I tell you.
Bobby,
take Howie's number now.
And then if she calls back, you can come.
Yeah.
It's like having a little, like the tag sale.
Right.
Right here. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Eastbound 84 is on the...
Oh, the cat got fed. We put him in a box and we dug a little hole. Covered him with rocks and we picked a couple dandelions. Said a little prayer and we all went off to bed because we mostly didn't care. But in the middle of the night, a dog started sniffing. Was a Labrador retriever that belonged to Mrs. Griffin. And even though the cat was smelly and stiff, he thought it'd be a nice addition to Mrs. Griffin's kitchen. Well, throughout the house, she has cat curiosities with kitties on her couch and her coat and her colostomy. People gave her kitty gifts, but all a dog could afford is a cat he dug up with a case of rigor mortis.
All right, we're back. You know, I'm looking. I don't know whether they're serious or not, but there seems to be, there's something on online called the Cardinal Ratzinger Fan Club.
Yeah,
and they have T-shirts and hats.
My son looked that up earlier today. Yeah.
You kind of want one now, don't you?
Yeah,
collector's items. All right, should we go to? Let's talk to Dan from Talon. I think we may have exhausted this whole fan thing.
Dan.
How's it doing?
Hi, Dan.
Good to talk to you. I wanted to talk about the new Pope.
Yes.
And a prophecy. I don't believe in these sort of things, but maybe some of your listeners do.
Well, in this young season already, from the Toronto Blue Jays, Vernon Wells has already grounded into four double plays. The Red Sox are trying to find a way to trade for him.
Ooh.
Time for Sports Atois, the very French sports discussion segment of Mr. Ambrosio, Michel Brice Stevens, and myself, Louis Gondelaire.
Red Sox don't.
Okay, we've got another young listener right
now. Good. You know, and we advise people to email us at 1080 Talk or whatever the email address is.
This is from Charlie. He's
What is the email address?
I don't know. We don't know either. 1080 Talk.
That's CBS.com. Right.
This is from Charlie. He's 8 years old. He lives in Jewett City, Connecticut.
I love Jewett City.
Just, dear Mr. Ambrosio, when rocket ships land on other planets, how do they land?
They usually land nose first, because in most other planets, because they're flipped around, it's easier for the astronauts, this is rockets with astronauts in them, to get out. They just sort of slide down the nose and slip their way out. If it's an unmanned rocket, Charlie, what's his name? If it's an unmanned rocket, Charlie, then normally what happens is that it'll slide in on its belly and hope to stop before it falls off the planet. That happens with Pluto, and it also happens with another planet I can't name.
Plenty of time to clean it.
I've decided, by the way, that one thing I'm going to start doing more and more of, not necessarily on the radio, but in my own personal life, is pretending I'm Jack Bauer from 24. And what I now do is I demand information from people the way that he does. For example, even if I'm visiting my mother in the place where she's currently living, I'll just turn to the staff and say, and point to one of my mother's friends at the facility, for example, a woman named Janet, and say, give me everything you've got on Janet. Pipe it over to my screen. Because that's what they do all the time. I figured out that 24 is basically a celebration of information technology. It's on tonight. That's why I'm thinking of it. Also, I'm completely obsessed with it. But
it's funny. It doesn't show.
Yeah. It's all about sort of information technology, and it's about how much stuff they can figure. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of time, considering that it's a show where people shoot at each other and torture each other and stuff like that. There's a tremendous amount of conversation that goes on about computers, really at the almost wonky, geeky level of like the tab boys or evil computer Bob or something. They're always opening up ports, and I don't even know. And they're always piping. Have you ever the expression "pipe it over to my screen"?
No, I've never heard that.
I've never heard that anywhere except 24. I'm wondering whether that's a term of art in the world of computers. No one has ever said in my presence, "pipe it over to my screen."
I've never heard that.
Maybe it's just something they did say at Los Angeles CTU. Maybe it's like a little thing that was, you know. It sounds vaguely nautical somehow, you know.
It does. It does sound nautical.
Yeah.
You're right.
Anyway, that's what I've been doing, basically. I'll turn to my son and say, get me everything you have on, you know. Give me everything you have on M&M. Pipe it over to my screen. All right. I'm out of material. No, actually, also in the world of TV, I was just reading today that the Today Show is sinking like a stone, and they're panicking. You know about this?
No.
The ratings are not good, and
weren't they the big cheese in morning television?
They're falling fast, and they're panicking.
What is it, the CBS morning, whatever it is?
No,
Diane
Sawyer's eating their lunch.
Really?
Starting to eat their lunch, yeah. And they're in danger of falling behind. For the first time in years, the gap between Today and Good Morning America recently narrowed to just 270,000 viewers. So I guess they're still ahead, but they're falling, sinking like a stone. And this article managed to suggest that it's Katie Couric's fault, or that it's the fault of people who made Katie Couric too big a star, and that Katie Couric is now the monster that's eating her own show. I don't watch morning television. I never watch morning television. In fact, I don't think that I don't think people should watch morning television. And I would go so far as to say that people of faith, like me, don't watch morning television.
I caught a little of Regis and Kelly this morning while I was sitting waiting for my physical therapy.
What time are they on?
They're on at 9. I only saw a minute of it because I had an appointment at 9, and yeah. I just happened to be there, and I had to go in and be subjected to countless hours of pain.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Because I don't watch morning television, I didn't know anything about this, but they have had a longtime contributor, Janine knew about this, a style and fashion expert named Stephen Kojokaru, I think I'm mm-hmm. how you say it.
I don't know.
And he had a kidney transplant, and he gave an interview about his kidney transplant. I guess it was about his kidney transplant, or perhaps it was more about sort of fashion trends in kidney transplants. You know, whether, for example, you can get a plaid one now or something. But whatever it was, he gave an interview to Oprah. He was also going to give an interview to his own show. But they were so angry at him that they fired him summarily. And this is also offered in this article as another instance, or another proof that they're panicking over there at the Today Show. And not only that, but now they also, like, say nasty stuff. They talk a little bit of smack about Good Morning America on the show.
Why wouldn't that serve, by going on Oprah, why wouldn't that serve as a little cross-promotion?
You'd think.
For the Today Show, this is the kind of thing you'd think they'd want to encourage.
Yeah, you would think. But, anyway, it's all...
Apparently not.
The suggestion is that they're losing ground, that Katie is too big a star, and that also she's sort of always kind of morphing in ways that are disturbing to people, whereas... Miss Sawyer's appeal, writes the New York Times, is not that she's new and exciting, but that she is a consistently smooth, even restful presence. Her golden good looks never change, and she handles herself, she handles interviews and chatter with her genial co-host, Charles Gibson, with a poised, creamy insincerity. I wish I were capable of a poised, creamy insincerity that never varies or falters. Anyway,
see, I don't get that.
They say the success is for Katie.
I would much
who
prefer
do you like?
What?
Who's Katie
Couric.
You like Katie?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I said,
you can't beat that
show.
CBS morning show.
And they have like eight different hosts,
there's
right?
At least eight, maybe 12.
It's Harry Smith and...
Yeah, Julie Chen and Hannah Storm.
Harry's Angels, basically.
Harry's Angels,
that's
yeah.
What we're dealing with here.
I think Drew Barrymore, even.
I've always liked Harry Smith, actually. But as I say, I don't watch morning television.
You don't watch CNN or anything like that in the morning?
No. I think people should be listening to the radio in the morning. People of faith should be definitely
listening to the radio.
Yeah.
What time should they be listening to the radio?
Well, they should be listening to the radio now, too, of course. But in the morning,
yeah.
It seems like a natural thing.
Are you talking morning? Are you talking early morning? Are you talking perhaps a little later on in the morning?
Well, the Buddy Show? I don't know. I don't know about the Buddy Show. I happen to like the Buddy Show, and I enjoy listening to it. For
institutional purposes?
Of time.
Oh.
Or for institutionalization purposes.
Yeah.
But I find that 5 or 6 minutes, you know, at a stretch is fine with the Buddy Show. It's like you get a little sort of...
Well, I thought I was about to hear the words too much.
Glimpsed into the mouth of hell. You hear the demons shrieking and stuff. And then you sort of, you know, start dialing around. But no, I like the Roy and Debbie Show. And I like...
Start dialing around?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, I like the Buddy Show. I enjoy the Buddy Show, and I recommend the Buddy Show to anyone interested in the subject. But, I mean, there's just, like, so much of it.
What is the subject?
Neo-Christian Miller's
The
Hand Ring.
There was some discussion going on today as identifying one of the shows, and I don't recall which that it was, as being a military show.
Well, that would be Buddy Show.
No, I meant one of the shows.
Well, one episode of the
episode.
Oh, the military
would be described as the military episode.
Would it be easier to single out one episode that's kind of a little bit less military than others, kind of generally non-military?
The cleaning woman.
The cleaning.
Czar. By now.
Just walked by and waved at us. So the fact that I'm a cleaning scofflaw apparently is not that big a problem so far.
No, I think Janine, our boss, gave you a pass.
My desk,
because you weren't
heaps
here.
And heaps and heaps of things on it.
Yeah.
But one thing that I have complete confidence about is there's nothing in the heaps. And when I say heaps and heaps of things, there's a pile of stuff on my desk that's, 8-9 inches deep at least. Higher
Please.
Than that?
Much higher.
Higher than that? Okay, 2 feet deep?
2 feet.
I wonder if Joe Fury comes in there to actually find out what the actual depth of...
He might measure it for you.
Let's say it's 2 feet deep. One thing I have complete confidence in, there's not a thing in there that has any meaning to me whatsoever.
I suggested to Mr. Sherwood that we perhaps should clean it for you, so when you came back, and he said we'd have no idea what to save or not to save.
Although Audrey Blondin, who's apparently running for Secretary of State, not with our help, I might add, did send me an autographed version of her. She had these fly swatters. Remember the flashlight?
That's right. Yep. You got one of those?
She heard that I was talking about them, so she autographed one and mailed it to me.
Excellent.
Although, because that means it's like getting a Louisville Slugger with a group, you know, Richie Allen's autograph on it.
Yep.
Although I think some of her fly swatting statistics are now being called into question because of steroid use.
Asterisk.
Yeah, exactly.
The WTIC News team covers Connecticut and reports on the local...
This Saturday, April 30th. Don't miss it.
Cows. We're remarkable cows. Wherever we go, it's a fabulous show. Oh, you know we are cows. That's right, we're cows. Such remarkable cows. We can sing very low. We can dance in a row. We are lovely and small. Yes, you know we are cows.
You know, usually when we have a guest on the show who's written a book, we have to get the book and read the book in order to prepare for the interview. Now, in the case of Temple Grandin, who's joining us right now, that wasn't necessary because I was already reading and had by my bed Animals in Translation, her amazing book, which is subtitled Using the Mysteries of Autism to Decode Animal Behavior. Temple Grandin is with us now. Temple Grandin, welcome to our show.
It's really great to be here.
This book is so interesting, and it is really one of these books where on every page there's something that at least I didn't know and something that's interesting and relevant. And basically what you've been trying to do is to show people how to think about animals and how to think about animals, I guess, in the way that animals think, right?
Well, that's right. And to understand animals, you've got to get away from thinking in language.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, animals are going to think in pictures, in sight, in touches, smells, sounds, and there's no language.
One of the things that we all have things about the animals around us that puzzle us, and one of the things that is dealt with and answered in your book for me, I have a dog who's basically he's a beta kind of dog. He's not an aggressive dog at all. But sometimes when he's on a leash, he reacts much more aggressively to dogs around him, a dog that might be passing by. And you talk a little bit about...
He's more aggressive just on a leash.
Yeah.
And one of the things that can sometimes happen is if you start screaming at the dog when he's on the leash, when he's barking, the dog might be interpreting that as, help me from that other, you know, bad dog.
Yeah.
And you see, this is where you've got to figure out what is motivating the animal. Now, if he's out loose, he's just by himself. But when he's on a leash, he might kind of feel like he has to protect you. You know, you have to figure out if there's some situations where you may need to just calm him down,
mm-hmm.
you know, rather than yelling at him because he doesn't understand language. So he'd hear that urgency in the tone of your voice, and he might, you know, interpret that as, help, you know, mm-hmm. this other dog's dangerous, you know, defend me against him.
We should explain that Temple Grandin is a doctorate in animal science and has been an associate professor at Colorado State University. And one of the things that you try to do is use your autism as a means of connecting with the way animals think. Do I have that right?
Well, yes, because as an autistic person, I think in pictures. I don't think in language. I mean, obviously an animal can't think in language, and sometimes you can get problems in an animal with fear memory. And these fear memories are going to be pictures. Like, for example, you think if a dog got hit by a car, he'd be afraid of cars. But he might end up being afraid of the piece of pavement he was looking at right at the time that he got hit by the car.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's a visual association. You can get a situation where if somebody abused a horse with a jointed type of bit, horse will get afraid of that type of bit. And if you get rid of that bit, and put a different one in his mouth that feels different, gives him a different feeling picture, then he may be just fine.
So one of the things that you do, and this comes out in the book, is that you sort of try to think through something exactly the way an animal would be thinking through it. For example, there's a story about a cat who seems to know when her owner is going to come home, and you figure out how the cat knows this just by kind of thinking in the cat's head.
Well, that's right, because cats have extremely sensitive hearing. That occurred in the New York apartment, and most New York apartment buildings are very small, so the apartments are close to the elevator. You know, you're never more than, you know, four or five doors away from the elevator. And I think it's more likely that the cat was able to peer down the shaft and hear the owner talking to the elevator operator than that the cat was psychic. I mean, I got several letters where people wrote to me saying that, well, obviously the cat was psychic, and that's how he heard down the elevator shaft. He couldn't have possibly have heard the owner's voice. Mm-hmm. But the cats have extremely sensitive hearing, and I think it's very likely that the cat was hearing the owner talking to the elevator operator as she got on the elevator.
Now, using this method, you've become very famous, obviously, for the design of slaughterhouses. And one of the things that you've tried to do is think, you know, once again, in the brain of a cow and what would be upsetting or not upsetting to a cow, right?
Well, one of the things is animals look at detail.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch a cow in a slaughterhouse, what's he afraid of? He's afraid of a reflection on a puddle on the floor. He's afraid of a chain hanging down. He's afraid of a vehicle parked next to the chute. He's afraid of moving equipment. And I find if you get rid of these little distractions, then they just walk on in. And then people say to me, well, don't the cattle know that they're going to die? Well, I needed to answer that question, and I did that a long, long time ago. And I watched how do the cattle act at the meatpacking plant, and how do the cattle act when they get their vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And they acted exactly the same way in both places.
Yeah. And the thing about details is a big part of your book, that animals and autistic people, you say, share the trait of thinking in details, whereas other people think in a much more general, kind of big picture way and miss a lot of details.
Well, you see, that what has been an interesting experiment done by a researcher named Nancy Minshew, and she put autistic people and normal people in a brain scan machine, and then she had them repeat back some sentences, and the autistic brain just lights up and gets all activated in just the parts of the brain that handles the detail of the individual words. And the normal person's brain loses the detail of the individual words and lights up on the part of the brain that looks at the whole entire sentence.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things you talk about, actually, is the fact that non-autistic people often will miss glaring details that should just leap out at them. But because these details don't really fit into the big picture, people just kind of scream them out?
Well, they just don't see it. I mean, I have a thing in the book where I talk about a big jagged piece of metal that was sticking out of the side of a shoe, and, you know, the cattle were getting bruises on them, and they, you know, nobody at the plant saw that. And I think part of the problem is, you know, I can visualize things in my head. So when I look at that big piece of jagged metal, I can visualize the animal hitting that. In fact, in my equipment designing, I can test run pieces of equipment in my head, you know, kind of like these virtual reality computer programs.
Yeah.
And I used to think everybody could do that. And I found out by interviewing a whole lot of people that most people cannot do that.
We should mention that, first of all, we're talking to Temple Grandin, and her book is called Animals in Translation. This Saturday, April 30th, the Autism Society of Connecticut is going to have its 15th annual statewide autism conference at Gateway Community College in North Haven, starting at 8:30. And next year, Temple Grandin is going to be the keynote speaker at this very same conference. It's one of the reasons why we asked her to be here today. You know, we only have a minute left, and there's so many things in this book that I was intrigued by or fascinated by. But is there one particular thing that you wanted to mention in the minute or so that we had left?
Well, I just want to get people to understand their animals better. One thing that's very important is you need to understand the animal's motivation. Did the dog or the dog bite because he was scared or because he was aggressive? Did the horse kick because he was scared? It's very important that you know the motivation, because if you punish fear-based behavior, you're going to make it worse. In the back of the book, there's a troubleshooting guide to help you solve animal behavior problems.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we need to really be careful about, you know, socializing, you know, animals to other animals. It's extremely important to socialize puppies and adolescent dogs to other animals. This will help prevent a lot of problems with fights. We also have got to socialize puppies to everybody's toddler, so that the dog learns that you are friends with all toddlers everywhere.
Temple Grandin, I wish we had more time, but thank you very much. The book is really terrific. It's called Animals in Translation, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, it's time to talk a little bit about Dr. Jerry. You know, sometimes when Dr. Jerry is working on your teeth, he'll look into your mouth and he'll say to Magdalena, give me everything you've got on this bicuspid and pipe it over to my screen. Actually, Huggabone just...
funny, I've heard him say that.
Yeah, Huggabone just told me that he affirmed my suspicion that nobody in the world of computers says pipe it over to my screen, but it's entirely a sort of invented jargon for 24. Well, anyway, this has got nothing to do with Dr. Jerry, although if that was something... He's like the Jack Bauer of dentists. He's not afraid to do whatever it takes to make you feel comfortable, make you feel happy, and for you to have a great, caring, gentle dentistry experience, even if he has to put his own life on the line, even if he has to go off the grid and put himself in jeopardy,
I don't think he needs to put his life on the line. I don't think it ever gets to that.
No, it doesn't. Ideally, it doesn't do that. But
if he had to,
he wouldn't hesitate. If one of your teeth turned out to be radioactive, he would fly it out to the Mojave Desert and die with it if he had to. But let's hope it doesn't come to that. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld at Avon, over 25 years of caring gentle dentistry because he caters to cowards. And he's high tech. He's got the soft touch. Make sure you've got music to listen to on your headphones while you're having your teeth worked on. Worked on. We don't even say worked on. He's having an experience with your teeth. He's becoming your teeth. He's one of the few dentists. He becomes your teeth. Be the tooth. That's what his master told
him. Be the tooth.
Yeah, when he was in dental school, he was addressed as a grasshopper. He said, grasshopper?
Yeah, be the tooth.
He's one of the few dentists in the state using the new dental water laser. No drill, no noise, no needle, nothing like that. In most instances, you get the fillings without the drillings. Exceptional dentistry, maximum comfort. So relax, smile, call 674-0707 for an appointment. Some evening hours and easy parking in old Avon Village. Look for the sign with a silver toothbrush. Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards. 674-0707. Well, I just wanted to say, Lenny Dykstra? Sports gambling? Jeez, he seems like such an even-tempered, clean-living guy. It's time for Sports Atois, the very French sports discussion segment with Mr. Kevin Nathan, Michel Brice-Stevens, and myself. When was the last time we talked to Kevin?
First of all, I just want to say that I'm not offended by this exactly, but the Hartford Current has this need. Which is part of their overall. I mean, they're owned by Tribune, and Tribune also owns Channel 61. So anytime they're reporting anything that happens in the sky, or then they have to mention John Carroll. Yeah, who, first of all, I think was, before he was here, he was with Los Angeles CTU. He worked with Jack Bauer, I think, anyway. And he can kill a man with a sling barometer. But,
John Carroll?
John Carroll can, yes. His hands are deadly weapons. But they had this whole thing with that, the fireball, that nobody knew what it was.
Right,
like that.
It was planes crashing.
The Coast Guard is scrambling, thinks we're being attacked by Jupiter or something. And it turns out to be a meteor shower. And this is what it says. It says, was seen through around 8:30 from Clinton through eastern Connecticut to the Massachusetts border, turned out to be part of the Lyrid meteor shower, said John Carroll, chief meteorologist at Fox 61. Well, first of all, you don't need John Carroll to tell us that now. Everybody knows by now it was the meteor shower. But why doesn't it have to be sourced to John Carroll? And anyway, if he was so smart, why didn't he tell everybody that before the entire state panicked and the Coast Guard was scrambled?
I bet Fury had it.
Well, who knows? It would probably be buried in some 8-minute report, I'm sure he had it. I mean, if you report everything.
I really like animals. I like them a lot. 15 animals is what I've got. I got 15 animals, they're friendly and tame, and I've given each one a special name. I got a cat named Bob and a dog named Bob, and two fish called Bob and Bob.
I think we get the idea. Okay, I'm so glad that the commercial was on, because I heard it earlier today, and it's a very interesting commercial. It's a little bit disappointing, a little bit alarming and disturbing. This commercial,
the swing commercial,
the SBC phone book commercial with the front porch swing. And my
swing together, maybe.
Well, my question is, there's a moment in the commercial where the swing becomes happy. And my question is, what is the swing doing when it's happy? Play that, Bobby.
The porch swing carefully was down at the book. It was the SBC Yellow Pages. The swing was overjoyed. And if he took a moment to put the book inside.
What is the swing doing when it's happy?
The swing was overjoyed. And if he took a moment to put the book inside. But the point is,
there's another swing that comes up on the porch at that point and joins the swing?
I really have no explanation at all.
What is that swing doing?
Very, very
it's
happy.
It's an excellent commercial. And to tell you the truth, it really makes me want to have one of those phone books. But I'm also, my feeling is that there are children listening, too.
Yeah.
They'll never look at the swing. I'd be a little reluctant to sit on that swing right after they've just seen the phone book. I'd want the swing to cool off a little bit before I sat on it anyway. All right, that's all. That's all I have to say about that. I mean, the guy who critiques our commercials, Matt from Middletown, I don't know if he's listening or not. He may, well, we wouldn't even put him on the air probably about that. But yeah, and he also has very funny opinions. And you know, speaking of Temple Grandin and animals, there's this very interesting article in the Stanford Advocate, the headline of which says, "Expert: Hounds must join forces to battle geese." You know, it's not, there's no one town, like Westport alone can't tackle the geese problem.
No.
It's going to take a united Justice League, a coalition of the geese unwilling. Yeah. And that's what we're looking at right here. All right. Well, we have some other animal reports that are coming up here. Bruce has something about exploding toads. I've got things about geese. But first, do you have our music? Joining us now, our special New Hartford correspondent.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
Break it down for me, Shorty.
Mary, Mary, I need your hugging.
What's up, baby girl?
Hi.
I said, what's up, baby girl?
I just want to criticize you. As you know, I
again?
Do. And I feel that you need it. Because you are referring to Jim Bicevich's buddy.
Yeah.
He's not your buddy. What are you crazy?
He's my buddy. I've known him forever. I don't have
But he doesn't know you.
Yes, he knows me.
Night and day.
Well, we may be night and day, but we know one another. Opposites attract. For example, you and I. Obviously, there's a tremendous sexual chemistry between the two of us,
but
we have nothing in common with one another.
Well,
nothing in common.
But Jim Bicevich is a very honorable person, and he speaks rightly so.
I mean,
and I'm very disgusted. I just got a call from a friend of mine who gets the Waterbury Republican.
Yeah.
And she said, where were you two? Were you at that conference yesterday?
Who?
You both of us?
Who, Bruce and I?
What conference? I was in Vermont. I don't know.
Did you go?
Bruce was in Vermont renewing our civil union.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He would be. Well, let me tell you. 80 people showed up.
Yeah.
So that civil union, the Waterbury Republican said.
Uh-huh.
3,000 were there protesting. Did you know that?
No, but they just blew a whistle at religious fanatics
here.
Hear.
You see the difference?
We see the difference.
The stupid press, which we know is controlled and has been for years. I know when I used to go to Washington to march, I'd come back and I'd say, well, did you see us on TV? Oh, no, we didn't see anything.
And Shorty,
I'm talking about years ago.
You know, Shorty, you sound kind of angry today.
And I'm not Shorty.
Baby.
So, okay, and never mind that being smarty aleck.
I'm expressing affection towards you. You can't.
Never mind that stupid talk.
See, you reject my affection.
I think you are stupid to be pro that civil union.
Well, first of all,
everybody that's pro it is going to be turned around completely because there's going to be. You wait and see what happens.
You know, you're not really much. You're not really much for sort of a back and forth kind of conversation.
No,
you just mainly want to tell.
Listen, Connecticut made them laughing stock to think that they would pass that.
Is that how things are?
Made a laughing stock.
Is that how things are with Mr. Mary?
And,
I mean, does he ever get to talk when you're
only 5%
Mary?
Of the ones that
honey,
are pro.
Sweetie.
Never mind.
Is that how it is with your husband? I mean, when you're talking to him, I mean, do you actually sort of listen when he's talking and then sort of wave and think about what he's saying?
My husband is German.
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm part German, too.
That explains what kind of marches you were at in Washington.
But I'll tell you, I wish you two would get with it, you know? Mm-hmm. You're both on such a rotten side.
I know.
And you could do so much.
We're circling the drain, aren't we?
Well, you certainly could do so much.
What happened? What do you suppose happened to our morals? Because at one time, we were both righteous, upright, young Christian men.
We're both divorced, I know that.
Yeah. Well, no, Bruce is happily married to Mrs. Stevens.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, he's married to the most wonderful woman you can imagine.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that this has got to be turned around.
I know.
The governor has got to change her thinking.
Yeah.
What's the matter with her?
Now you're mad at the governor, too, huh?
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
You sound very mad.
I'm very disappointed.
You're in denial if you say you're not. Because I think our listeners can tell how angry you are right now.
I'm not angry. At
you're tremendously angry. You're dripping and brimming and seething with anger.
Not
it's dripping. It's You're like a witch gargling battery acid right now. You're so angry, and you can't even face that about yourself.
Colin, you're the one that's angry.
I'm not even the tiniest bit angry. I'm a man of peace. I'm totally...
In fact, you don't even let me talk.
Well, I...
Why don't you keep quiet?
Well, because then you just talk and talk and talk, and you don't even listen when I'm...
Well, a lot of people want to get you off the air, you know that.
You just say stupid.
So watch out.
What do a lot of people want?
They want to get you off the air because they're disgusted.
What is that, some kind of Tom DeLay threat you're throwing at me right now?
No, I'm saying that people are disgusted with what you come out with.
Well, who besides you wants to get me off the air?
You're talking against Hartford all the time?
Yeah.
And you talk about...
Hey, I live in Hartford. I'm not cowering out in New Hartford with a bunch of, sheep and mountain lions and stuff like that. I'm living in Hartford.
Yes.
I'm living in the hood.
Oh,
I'm keeping it real.
Yeah, but the Hartford Current was very good back when Colonel Reitemeyer was in charge. And he was really...
A lot of things were better in 1992, but somehow or other we just have to go forward, We have to embrace change.
That's why it's so liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody takes it anymore.
You know what? I'd like to see if we could end this on a note of love.
Well, we don't have to, not between us.
How about just kind of a radio hug? How about kind of a radio soul kick?
Great.
Huh?
Put your thoughts straight for a change.
But not until I hear some love from
you. Well, you better.
Some love. Just say one loving thing to me.
Just try going to church.
Reach down inside that flinty little heart of yours and say something loving to me.
Let me talk. You have to keep yakking.
No, I'm asking you for some love.
No, you're not getting love. You're trying to be very facetious.
Story of my life.
No, I mean it.
All right. Bye-bye. That went on too long, didn't it?
You mean past the 10-second mark?
It's just that, you know what it is? It's like, have you ever been in a relationship where you keep thinking you're going to get what it is that you want, that you don't, you never quite get it, but you feel like you can see it there. It's on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, if I just do one more thing, if I say the right thing, if I ask for what I want in the right way, this other person will give me what it is that I need.
Right.
But in fact, the entire dynamic of the relationship is that you're not going to get what you want.
Yeah.
And even as you approach that horizon, it recedes from you.
Can I say this?
What?
A lot of people hate you.
They do, and they want to get me off the air.
Right.
Yeah.
We did have one caller that was all for taking us off the air, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's besides it. Suzanne, did anybody else call up?
Yeah. Who else from Infinity called?
Besides Sumner Redstone, did anybody else call up and say they wanted us off the air? You know, if I were a porch swing talking to Mary, I'd be saying, maybe if I should just address her exclusively in porch swing talk, maybe things would be better between the two of us.
Yeah.
But it is true that she and I have that kind of relationship, and I've been in that in my personal life, my twisted, disgusting, debauched personal life to which she alluded. I've been in that relationship. You never quite get what you want, and now I'm in one with her. So 42 people have called now and said they'd like to show off the air.
Yeah.
That's still not that significant ground.
Not that many.
Yeah, we get more people calling up just trying to win crappy tickets.
Speaking of tickets.
Oh, these are good tickets.
These are good tickets. Bill Maher coming up on June 10th at the CareerBuilder.com Oakdale Theater.
Yeah.
We have tickets for that sometime. Not now, though, I guess.
No, I think we should let excitement build.
Excitement will build.
I think Bill Maher is getting funnier. I used to not like him that much. I think he's getting funnier and Dennis Miller is getting less.
Oh, funny. Dennis Miller. Oh, please.
And there's nothing more horrible than watching Jon Stewart interview Dennis Miller on The Daily Show and then kind of as an act of courtesy, laughing in this kind of squeaking, whinnying, unctuous way at stuff that was just completely not funny. And Dennis Miller is really not funny. And
there was
John,
a day when
Jon Stewart, who is really funny, was sitting there pretending he thought Dennis Miller was funny.
All right, you want to take a couple of these?
Let me take some. Right. The value of those calls.
Gene in Springfield. Gene?
Major League Baseball is considering a rule change in which the Red Sox and Devil Rays would dispense with baseball altogether and spend 3 hours trying to kill one another. It's always kind of a tip-off when the Devil Rays signed Ozzie and Jose Canseco before the game as free agents. It's time for Sports Antoine, the French sports discussion segment of Monsieur Ronald Dean, Michelle Bruce, Stevens, and myself. We got gone to the mayor.
Did Dean bring his own? He'd be plastered.
Right.
He was one of those guys that just could not drink, period. It didn't take a lot for him.
He would be some sort of an expert in that particular
Did you notice that in... Why would?
Well...
Yeah, I was in the tiki bar the night that none punched Arnold out. Arnold had five fog cutters, and one of those nuns who hangs out with Calhoun took him out.
The night I finished first in the...
five fog cutters. That's right. The truth is that the noise of the porch swing was Arnold in the limbo contest at the tiki bar.
I told the two nuns about that story. You know, as a matter of fact, I mentioned this. I had a lunch where I talked last week, and somebody wanted to know some things about you off the air and so on. So I told them about that night, that whole evening.
Right. To be fair, the nuns punched out five other guys that night. It wasn't just Arnold.
They were so terrific. Yeah. And when I told them, you said that they finished second in the limbo contest, Sister Mary said, well, now, he's absolutely right that they couldn't tell whether or not we were any better than that, because with those habits, it's very hard to do the limbo.
Exactly.
And I said, boy, these are my kind of nuns.
Right. All right, so what else is going on?
Well, not an awful lot.
That garment that Arnold's wearing is made out of.
The ski shirt there, or whatever it is.
It's like made out of Lycra or something. You know, it's not a ski shirt. You know, he's like the only person I know who really models his wardrobe a lot on Burgess Meredith in the Rocky movies. I think he goes over to, like, Sports Authority or something.
He's like, he's going, go ahead, spit in the pail.
Yeah.
one of those.
Exactly. He's like, walks around with these big Q-tips and stuff like that in a bucket of water. All right, we have to give these... Well, we're delighted to give Bill Maher.
Thrilled is the word. Pair of tickets to see Bill Maher on June 10th, the careerbuilder.com Oakdale Theater. Caller number what?
Wasting their time listening to this show. We have a young caller on the line.
We do.
Something we like better than to talk to a young caller.
Right. Renee in Manchester. Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Now, how old are you?
13.
What are you doing listening to this show?
It's the best show you can listen to.
It's not either. Get out.
No.
It's a horrible show, and you shouldn't be listening to it anyway. Shouldn't you be listening to, like, Hillary Duff or something?
No.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
What is it you want to say?
I want to give a shout-out to all my friends.
Yeah. See, you do think it's Hillary Duff. You think it's, you know, TRL or something.
No.
All right. We're often mistaken for TRL. All right, and what else?
And my dad's a Republican.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, do something bad to him tonight. Put, like, some hot pepper in his underpants or something.
Hey, and my brother give a shout-out, too.
Okay. Oh, man, I hate this. Now I really do feel like I'm, you know.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Jeez. Don't these kids have any supervision? Isn't there a parent in the house? Wait, isn't there a Republican dad making sure they have somebody looking after them and they're not calling talk radio and disrupting it?
He's busy watching the Bill Frist thing that he T-boned.
Really? And they're doing shout-outs? I feel like I'm Sandy Beach now or something.
Oh, there's a name.
There was somebody in this market named Sandy Beach.
Yes. Scientist in Hamburg.
Long John Landis or whatever his name was.
Scientist in Hamburg, Germany, baffled by the strange deaths of hundreds of toads after they apparently exploded in around a pond. Many of 1,000 toads have died after their bodies swelled to bursting point and then exploded, according to reports from animal welfare workers and veterinarians.
You know what it is? There are people who feed the toads popcorn. And then they sit out in the sun and they explode.
Which is probably
that's
just
what Bobby
make...
and Heidi do. They go down and feed the geese popcorn and then the geese explode. All right. We're enjoying this music and we're also... We're also looking for this. We're looking for the paperwork. Well, also, I got all distracted. It was this child looking in the window.
Oh, what a classic.
Well, we were trying to discourage children from coming here and looking in the window in the lobby, so I threw the flash water at him. And I just completely, it was perfect.
Dead center.
The bullseye.
The kid jumped about 8 feet into the air.
Now he's out in the car crying.
Mommy, I'm poor man.
Okay, here's the plan. The plan is that on April 29th, which is coming this weekend, 6:30 and 8:30, Rick Miller will show up at the Harriet S. Jorgensen Theater in the Stores and perform the entire play of Macbeth in 1 hour with only one person, himself, impersonating all of the different roles as if they were being played by The Simpsons, but only if The Simpsons were dogs. It's got a lot of layers to it. Anyway, Rick Miller is here with us now, and he's going to explain this better than I just did.
Hi. You did a pretty good job. You used too many words, though, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Simpsons do Macbeth. That's pretty much the concept. And, it's a solo performance of Macbeth, brutally edited and distorted and Simpsonized. And, it's a lot of fun.
And explain what your background is and how you find yourself doing such a thing.
Well, this particular show started about 10 years ago when I had a little too much time on my hands in a production of Macbeth, in which I was playing murderer number two.
Yeah.
So I had about six lines, and the characters, or the actors, reminded me of Simpsons characters, so I decided to throw together a little cast party joke that I called Mac Homer, and 10 years later, here we are.
How many times have you performed this in the 10 years?
It's coming on 500.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot, but it's changed a lot over the years. Again, it started as a little joke and then turned into this big show that's been touring the world.
I would imagine you'd have to get some kind of permission from The Simpsons to do such a thing.
Yeah, at first it was pretty small, and when it was a fringe festival show, which is basically just kind of alternative theater festivals, I called Fox and I said, look, I have this show, and I did some drawings. I said, okay, well, fax the drawings over just to make sure they're not awful, and... And it was fine for a while, and then the show kept getting bigger and bigger, and then I met the actual Simpsons cast and creators and crew and all that, and Matt Groening when I was in Scotland doing the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah.
And Mac Homer was a huge hit there, Scottish play, and the Simpsons are big, and then the Simpsons were actually coming to do a one-night-only reading of the way they did it on the Actors Studio. They come and, they're... red carpet.
Except not with James Lipton, who they hated.
What's that?
Except not with James Lipton, who they hated.
Exactly. No, anyway, they had a good time. Everybody loved them, and I was at the cast party after, not quite sure what they would think of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'd heard of me because my show was selling out all over the place. And I finally went up to Dan Castellaneta, and I said, look, I'm the McHomer guy. And he went, first thing out of his mouth was that, to be or not to be, which was very, very funny because it broke the ice. It was the wrong play, of course, with Shakespeare. But he then led me around a bit like a party trick, and next thing you know, I was standing in front of Matt Groening, who I'd heard of my show. He shook my hand. He said, you have my blessing. Unfortunately, I don't own the characters anymore, but I'll do what I can to help you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the...
and here you are.
And here I am, yeah. So through their generosity...
Yeah.
They haven't come on board officially. It's one of those cases where they just basically say, you know, go ahead, we won't stop you.
So, and just to sort of help people understand this, so this is a thing where basically Macbeth is Homer and Lady McHomer is Marge Simpson and
you want to hear a little bit?
Yeah, give us a little.
Okay, again, this is the audio version, but in this little segment, you'll hear. 12 characters in this. The three witches will be played by Captain McAllister, the R guy, Mo the bartender, and Principal Skinner.
Right.
And then Mr. Burns will play King Duncan. Smithers will play Malcolm. Actor Troy McClure will play various thanes. Homer will play Macbeth. Marge will play Lady M. And Krusty will play the drunken porter. Barney will play Macduff. Banquo will be played by Flanders. And finally, the three murderers. Otto, Apu, and Grandpa.
Right. That's all we have time for now, but thank you very much for being on. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Sorry, man, that was a little long. But just so you know, here we go. R, when shall we three be meeting again? In thunder, lightning, R, in rain. Ha, ha, ha.
When the hurly-burly is done, when the bam is lost and won.
That will be near the set of sun.
Where the place? Upon the heap.
There to meet with Macbeth.
I don't say that, it's bad luck.
A tale of royalty. What bloody man is that?
I'm the Thane of Wrong, sir.
Hello, I'm the Thane of Wrong. You might remember me from other Simpsons do Shakespeare classics, such as Othello and Hamlet.
Excellent. No more that say, Miss Cardor, shall receive our bosom interest, go pronounce his present death, and with his former title greet the...
Homer's a sick humor, a tale of illusion.
A dagger which I see before me.
For a pizza. Pizza. It is there, and on a blade and such and touch of blood. That's the main for just. I have done the deed.
It's down out here annoyed.
I heard the owl scream and the cricket cry. The mind is sick.
When?
Now.
As I descended.
I.
Tonight in the second chamber.
Malcolm,
no! A tale of debauchery.
Was it so late, friend? There you went to bed. There you do lie so late.
Oh, thank you. We were carousing till the second cock.
Hey there, strangers. What's for the old trapperoony? Let us come down.
Oh, bring it down, man.
Treachery, slag, and play on swaddly, deadly, dolly.
He's not shutting up. Stick an axe in his head. Okay.
Paddly, deadly, dolly. I can't see anything.
Anyway, I should stop there.
Rick, you're obviously a very talented person, but are you under the care of any clinician right now? Are you getting any kind of help?
No, as a matter of fact, I live a pretty benign life. I have a wife and a daughter and a cat, and I like to read. This is my exercise.
Can other people see the wife and the daughter and everything like that? Are you sure that's not just something you've imagined?
I swear, man.
I know that you can make their voices, but can other people see the other people in your family? That was very, very funny, and that's amazing what you're able to do. And we should once again mention the shows are, I guess, this Friday is the 29th.
Yeah, it's Friday night.
6:30 and 8:30 at the Jorgensen. And we should also mention that this is in addition to Rick and his obviously strange personality. It involves multimedia stuff. There's puppets and video. I had puppets here in the studio that I was acting this out with while you were talking.
I see. And you saw them too? They weren't just imagined?
No, everyone can see my puppets.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
The police have asked.
If any of your kids are afraid of Macbeth or Shakespeare, it's a good show to break the ice, so to speak.
And if they're not afraid of Macbeth, they will
bring
be.
Them on. Chances are they probably like The Simpsons too, you know?
Yes, they will be after this. All right,
well perhaps.
Rick Miller, thank you very much and good luck and break a leg with the Scottish players. Do you still call it the Scottish play when
I don't. Some of the older actors do. Bad things have happened to me. I don't know.
Call it the Springfield play, actually. Thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So I'm reading this article from the Stanford Advocate about the towns joining forces to battle the geese, and there's all this interesting information about this, including our state's Canada geese population is estimated at 42,000, and according to the leader of the DEP Protection's Migratory Game Bird Program, which is probably the only DEP program that wasn't compromised by the rule of administration, at a goose management forum, sexual harassment.
Management. I thought the idea was to get rid of the geese.
Well, Min Huang, who's the leader of the DEP Migratory Game Bird Program, first of all says that the state could support a 5-fold increase without causing habitat damage.
Right.
But most people don't want to have them around anyway. But, you know, like, for example, we have these two coyotes, these two fake coyotes.
Yes, we do.
Hilly and Klein, down by Lake Sahanini.
Yeah.
That whole thing, or just even having a real border collie to run chasing geese around, or having reflective tape, or scarecrows, or, you know, having, like, gene falsers go down there and compete with them for food and habitat. That whole area, as opposed to actually killing geese, that whole area is known, the term of art for that is hazing. Believe it or not, it's called hazing.
Hazing.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to make the geese join a fraternity or something. But survey showed that 36 municipalities use at least one form of hazing, but only 3 municipalities reported a decrease in goose population. So Min Huang said municipalities should coordinate hazing techniques because otherwise you just push the problem on someone else.
It's just rotate.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to have, like, fake coyotes, then, you know, we'll see. Make sure the towns around you have fake coyotes, too. Like, all of our geese are not there anymore because they are afraid. They're such wussy little chicken-hearted geese anyway. They were afraid of these crummy little fake coyotes.
They'll catch on after a while.
But right now, they're somewhere else. They're pooping all over.
You know what's going to happen soon? Yeah. They're going to fly in and drop cardboard geese down on the coyotes.
On the coyotes, yeah. And so anyway, there's then a lot of people, then there's egg addling.
What?
Egg apple.
Yeah.
Is when you shake the eggs.
Right.
You go, you find the nest, you shake the eggs. And then there's hunting, obviously, which is...
Would you like to be one of the people to go in and shake their eggs? They will peck the hell out of you.
Will your ass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's
one way to put it,
by the way.
Forget hazing.
That's right. Yeah. Will your ass. And then they have roundups. And this sounds a little gizmo to me, but roundups in which geese are taken.
Is it roundup like the stuff you spray?
Generally, when they're molting and cannot fly, and euthanized. Definitely a program that would come up by some buddy vice versa. How don't you come with me? You guys, the ones eating the things on the ground. Come this way.
Is that where the goose stepping came from?
Yeah, goose stepping.
Yeah.
Good. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So managing the geese, according to Huang, will require a mix of lethal and non-lethal methods, starting with a forceful call to the public to stop feeding the birds. Well, we've done that here, right?
Yes, we have. We've cracked down.
The birds.
No more feeding.
As a matter of fact, we've been encouraged by management to go out and curse at them.
Yep.
Get it out of our system. Anyway, we'd like to thank everybody who helped out with today's show. And some people actually tried to destroy today's show. We'd like to thank them as well. And we'd especially like to thank our producer, Mr. Bobby Schroeder.
An official today who said,